Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is Graham Otteson. For over 20 years, Otteson worked as a midwife at OBGYN Associates and at September Hill Birth Center. She discovered gourds in 2006 and began growing them the following year. She now crafts beautiful lamps, night lights, and whimsical gourd art. She opened Gourdlandia 3 years ago in her home at Eco Village in Ithaca, where she creates her works as well as teaches and offers artist studios. She is one of the founding members of the New York State chapter of the American Gourd Society. And welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much.
Now, I never expect to have anybody on who was into gourds, but I know you had a long career as a midwife, and you also did art during all those years. So tell us a little bit about that, and how did you segue into gourds?
Well, sometimes I like to say it all started 25,000 years ago, but actually that's kind of when the gourds and people story started. My story started actually quite a long time ago when I was a little girl. I was a kid who liked to make something all the time. Friends would come over to the house, and I'd say, what are we going to make? And I burned my fingers on the creepy crawler machine and the Easy Bake Oven, and I spent hours in the closet playing with that light bright machine. And as I got older, I was dabbling in all kinds of crafts. I did paper mache and photography and gingerbread. I was the gingerbread queen in Ithaca for quite a number of years. Then, you know, I guess I'll fast forward to, well, when I met gourds, but that skips over the whole midwife part of the story.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. We're here to talk about gourds.
All right. In any case, my husband Otto and I were driving to a woodcarver's convention down in Candor. They were having a little exposition over there, and something caught my eye. But we drove on by, and we saw the show. And on the way back, I'm like, what was that? Where is that thing? There it is. Stop the car. And we got out, and it was just a handful of gourds at the end of this guy's driveway. But we met the guy who grew them, and we started learning about growing gourds and, you know, took a gourd home and planted a bunch of seeds the next year and started accumulating gourds. But I think a more interesting story than that is really, you know, what keeps me in gourds.
Well, I will definitely want to talk about that, but what was it that captured your imagination about gourds, though? When you saw those at the end of the driveway, what was it?
I've wondered about that, too.
Because you didn't know what they were?
I didn't exactly know what that was. It was actually that very gourd here that I brought into the studio.
She has about a 2.5-foot gourd sitting here in the studio.
And I think it must be the shape of gourds that's so amazing and that I try to preserve in my artwork, too. But I am indulging myself in the thought that people in general, and maybe me in particular, are attracted to gourds because of an innate beauty in them that comes from the very long history, which is why I said it all started 25,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because the relationship of people and gourds goes back about that far. And, you know, nowadays, a lot of people, they say, gourds? How on earth did you get into gourds?
Yeah.
Because there's a sort of a feeling that, you know, gourds are associated with kitsch, maybe, you know, snowmen or Santa Clauses or birdhouses or whimsy at the best.
Yeah, well, I think of them as utilitarian, too.
Yes.
People use gourds, you know, they'd make cups and vases and...
Yeah.
Yes.
And they do. And people make beautiful, beautiful vessels out of gourds.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to use them as vessels in a much more serious way, of course. You know, there was a time in our history as people where gourds were really critical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you didn't have a place to carry water, you wouldn't go as far.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have a place to store your grain or whatever it was that you needed to store. So vessels is what people think of as probably the first use of gourds, but also musical instruments.
Yeah.
Banjos,
yeah,
of course, drums, rattles.
But when you discovered them, you wanted to make art, right? I mean, did you know that immediately, or were they just beautiful things that you
caught my eye in a flash. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure what it was, but I have a sense that it was just sort of a recognition.
Yeah, they almost look like bodies, though. They have that same curve.
It's funny you should say that.
They do, to me.
Okay, so truthfully, this story of how I got into gourds is one that I've been thinking about a lot lately because I used to tell just that story about the car, seeing them and picking them up, and I didn't really have the whole context. So I've been working on trying to figure out exactly what it was that attracted me. And I was at a show at the Lavender Festival earlier this year, and I was kind of working on my story. I was telling this person about the dilemma. I don't really exactly know how to say how I got into gourds. And I said, well, I started out as a midwife. And she said, go no further.
I thought about that, too, honestly, Graham.
There's a voluptuousness about them, you know, that there's a sort of, like, there's this pregnancy about them almost, in a way.
Yeah, they do. They could look that way, especially if you just look at certain aspects of them. You know, if you get rid of certain pieces of them and just look at it, right. a certain yeah. piece of especially the bottom of the gourd.
You know, they're used in fertility rituals and all kinds of. I mean, they're full of seeds. You know.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so the whole thing makes sense. You've come full circle. You now know why. Tell us how you prepare a gourd to make it into an art piece. You have a little film on your website, which I hope people will go to, where it shows you painting and you have to carve out the seeds. And tell us of the process to prepare it to make a lamp, for instance.
Okay. Well, I tell people it starts with a seed. Okay, we grow gourds there at Gourdlandia, and the mm-hmm. studio is not at my house. I started out with working out of my house, and now it's in a building. It's still at Eco Village, but it's separate from the neighborhoods a little bit. And anyway, so you start with a seed, and then it takes a full year before the gourd that grows from that seed is ready to work with. Mm. So I was going to go into a few tips on cultivating gourds because people are always asking. Can I do that?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, start at the beginning.
So, yeah, at the beginning. So we start our seeds indoors in late April and baby them along through a month or so and put them out in May. And the reason we start them indoors is because the gourds have a really long growing season. You can plant smaller varieties directly in the soil, but most people in this area recommend you start them indoors. And then, you know, they grow really fast once they're in the ground and the ground's warmed up. They grow, you know, like pumpkins. It's a vine. It's an mm-hmm. annual. These are members of the cucurbit family. And then people always say, well, when do you harvest them? You don't have to harvest them. You can just leave them on the vine all winter long. That's how the big gourd farmers do it. Yes, there are big gourd farmers.
I believe it.
And but we actually put ours in a shed to keep the rodents out of them. You don't want to bring them in the house. A lot of people make that mistake and bring them in the house. And as the gourd is drying, it just dries all by itself. The water goes out of the gourd, and the skin of the gourd gets really moldy, really, really nasty looking. And that's the point where people lose hope. They give up. They throw it out. And when I hear that story, it makes me so sad because really underneath that mold is a solid gourd. And the mold actually makes beautiful markings on the outside of the gourd.
Yeah, they almost look like zucchini stripes. Mm-hmm. I saw pictures, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as that, during the winter, the gourd turns brown and then the skin gets kind of black and flaky. And really you can actually see mold growing on it. It's pink and blue and really nasty. You don't want that in your house. And then in the springtime, when the gourd is entirely dry, you just wash that off, and the gourd is really solid underneath.
And you've picked it from the vine by the time you do
that,
right?
Yes, you pick it from the vine, right. And it's a solid, good gourd as long as the gourd was really well-grown. And by that, I mean well-fed. They're really heavy feeders. We give each seedling that we plant about 2 wheelbarrows full of composted manure.
Wow.
Yeah, they're really
heavy
feeders.
I think they need more water than things like compost.
They do need water, but they're really heavy feeders because the vines are just amazing. They'll go 50 feet or more if you let them.
That's, you know what? When I saw pictures, they look like those pods from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, if anybody has seen that film, where people start growing from these plants in these gardens. They're very bizarre looking. I'm surprised anybody discovered that they were useful. They look kind of scary and poisonous.
I think people probably found them once they had dried, you know, mm-hmm. and there you pick up a shell and you can put something in it.
Yeah, so you paint the outside of it, right? You have to scrape out the seeds.
Right.
And I've heard that you use surgical tools and medical tools to do this. That's not traditional, is it? Is it because you're a midwife?
I have some friends in women's health, and some of those, you know, there are tools for scraping and grabbing that come in very handy in the gourd art, for sure. But yes, the first thing that you do is wash that moldy skin off the gourd, and it's dry, it's not slimy at that point. And then scrape out the insides of the gourd. The gourd insides are dry and full of seeds. I don't save the seeds because
they can contaminate.
Yeah, so you won't get a true variety the next year. I have an assortment of all kinds of carving tools, a little teeny saw that's about as big as a bar of soap, and I have about 20 Dremels at my studio, drills with different bits that I can just grab, and it's
fun.
Wow.
But the film of you, I saw you were painting a gourd, too. Do you paint them? Or
I don't.
Or something on them?
It's, uh-huh. Well, it's a stain. I use a stain, and then I use a wax finish. I think most gourd artists use an acrylic-based finish, and I just really like the softness of the wax finish. I was using a really groovy, beeswax and linseed oil finish that I got from Tried and True in Trumansburg, but that took a while to dry, and one of the things I like about gourds is about gourd art is that you can just progress so quickly and finish a project, in a day or two. Process was taking a long time. So what I discovered was that shoe polish, which is wax-based, gives a really nice shine. It's not too shiny. You know what I'm saying?
So do you have to do that? Do you have to prepare it that way before you start carving it? Is that what
that's the way
do to
I
keep
do it
intact?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other gourd artists will finish. No, you don't have to.
I was thinking that you had to, or else it would not. You wouldn't be able to carve easily. It would, splinter or something.
Not a bit. You can cut and carve on a raw gourd. We call it a dried gourd without any kind of finish first. But then it just makes it harder to finish because there's all kinds of nooks and crannies and stuff that you've carved that you may or may not want to finish. So I always start with a finish.
That makes sense. So tell us about how you discovered making these lamps, because they're elaborate, they're gorgeous, and I just wonder how you figured out how to even do something like that.
I've actually made lamps for a long time. I've got some lamps that I made almost 30 years ago when I was dabbling in ceramics and in pottery, and so I've been intrigued by lamps for a long time. Did you say how I've done it?
And how did you discover making lamps? Were you just doing an improv carving and you thought, ooh,
this, it could be a lamp.
I could put a light bulb in this?
I just gravitate to lamps. The way Otto tells the story, he says, I came home one day and she was making a lamp. And that's pretty much how I would tell the story, too. I just did it. I wanted to make a lamp for one of the nurses that I worked with, and the gourd seemed like the perfect medium for that. And I am pretty much self-taught as far as that goes. So,
if you're just joining us, my guest is Graham Otteson. She is a gourd artist, and she used to be a midwife, but we're talking about her work in art and carving and gourds and making gorgeous lamps. So you decided you wanted to make a lamp for a colleague, and you taught yourself how to do it.
Right. At that point, I didn't have very many tools. And the truth of the matter is you don't need a whole lot to get into the gourd art, but the rotary tools, the Dremels and that kind of thing are very handy. So what I do is I stain and wax the outside of the gourd, and I cut open the bottom where the light, if it's the shade that I'm making, and I don't throw that away because after I've gone through this whole process that I just told you about, I don't want to waste any little bit of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I can always find something to do with the scraps. And then I use a whole sort of series of scraping tools that I have on my bench and scrape out the inside of the gourd. And then, at first when I started making lamps, I was a little bit troubled by how I was going to make a design on the gourd that wouldn't detract from the beauty of the gourd. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a real conundrum for me.
I can imagine, yeah.
So, and it was funny because one of my friends up there at Eco Village, Liz Walker, actually, she said, I was telling her about like this quandary, and she said, well, why don't you look at the way the gourd grows? And that's all she said. And it's not like she knew the answer. She just sort of
planted that,
seed, right? Yeah. And yeah. They grow, like I said, they're cucurbits. They grow a lot like pumpkins with veins. You know what I'm saying? Like there's sort of these ribs, not nearly as visible as with a pumpkin usually, but on the inside you can see them. And that gave me the idea that I wanted to make designs that echo that the vertical sort of stripes on the gourd. Once I started doing that, it really all fell together. Like it made sense just to follow that pattern.
It makes sense on some of the creations of yours I've seen because they don't look like they're trying to detract in some ways, you know.
Yeah, thanks.
So you just look at the art. You look at the whole thing. Now, you also do drawings on your gourds, and you say that unconsciously or not, they look a little bit like Dr. Seuss's drawings. They're talking about whimsical.
Right. Right.
Right?
Excuse me.
So how did that come about? I wouldn't have even thought that you would think about drawing on them.
Well, let's see. I guess when I, sometimes I do a burned design. I don't usually do drawing the way a lot of gourd artists do with different colors and that kind of thing, but I'll either burn a design or make like holes in the shade that follow, like to make a bird, for example, or something like that. And I never set out to make anything that looks like something that Dr. Seuss would make. And so often it comes out that I have done that.
I see. I saw it in some of the photos of your work. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just, it's primitive art in some ways. Maybe it's just something that humans do.
I guess so.
You know what I mean? Because it always looked like primitive art to me.
Yeah,
nothing that Dr. Seuss just owned.
Right.
I want to ask you this, too. You grow your own gourds, but if someone wanted to get into gourd art and they didn't have the capacity to do that, where do people buy gourds? Are they expensive? Are they readily available?
They're not too expensive at all. Sometimes they price them kind of by the diameter of the gourd. So if you're getting a gourd that's 4 or 5 inches in diameter, it might cost $4 or $5, more or less. And I don't grow quite enough gourds to keep up with my gourd habit. And also, especially with the classes that I teach, I often need a lot of a similar type of gourd. So I get some from some Amish gourd farmers down in the Lancaster area. Yeah, Eli Smucker's Gourd Farm.
So you actually physically go down there. I was thinking that you might have to order online or something.
I call him usually. He certainly doesn't do, I can't order online
I understand
from Eli Smucker.
And it would take a couple of weeks to come up on the buggy, right?
Right. So actually he does sell them. He sends them to me in the mail, but he doesn't have a computer. So I can call up Eli Smucker and order some Gourd Farms or Henry Byler also down there. There's also some gourd farmers down in the Southwest that I can get gourds from sometimes. But once or twice a year we go down to Amish country in Pennsylvania, and we don't have a big car. We've got a little Honda Fit. But what we do is we put a cardboard barrier between us and the back of the car so that they won't topple on top of us. And then Otto fits them all in very precisely like a puzzle. Right, so we can fit as many as we can.
Ever got stopped by the cops with a bunch of gourds in the back, I wonder what they'd think.
We get some funny looks on the highway.
How strange they must look as a huge group in the back of a car. Now, did you make lamps to order? Somebody asked me that. Ask her that, whether you do or not.
Yeah, I sure do. I make lamps. What I often will do is go up in the attic. The attic of the studio there is full of boxes and boxes of gourds. And then we'll look at lamps in the shop and get a sense of what somebody wants. And then we'll go and find if they like this gourd or that gourd. And it's fun.
So you do that.
Yeah.
Well, tell us what the local chapter of the American Gourd Society does. Obviously, I've never heard of such a thing in my life. What do you guys do?
There are a handful of us, maybe a dozen active members. And the president is Terry Knoxville. She lives down in Windsor, just outside of Binghamton. And she is a go-getter in the gourd world. And we get together once a month or so, and we try to come up with like new projects, new techniques. We'll try a different kind of pyrography, burning on the gourd, or a different like rim embellishment, something like that. It's a lot of fun. It's a club.
So you actually get together once, and there are chapters all over the country, and
there
other
are
people
chapters
are doing things
all over the
Do
country.
Do they have conventions?
Yeah. Well, each state has. Well, most states, let's say, have gourd shows, gourd festivals, and that's how I did. I did get started with learning a few tips and tricks at the Pennsylvania Gourd Festival. They have a festival every June. In late June, and if anybody's really getting interested, besides coming to Gourdlandia and taking some of my classes, that's going to the Pennsylvania Gourd Festival is a really great way to find out more about gourds, and you can, of course, buy all kinds of raw gourds there.
Do you find that most of the people who are into gourd art come from other disciplines, like carving wood and, you know, doing other kinds of art and crafts?
It does seem like there's a lot of overlap with wood carvers and with the fiber artists.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fiber artists?
Yeah.
Have you tried wood carving too?
Oh, I have, yes. Yeah, I've done a little bit of that. I have trouble keeping those, the chisels sharp. I think I would do more of it if I felt confident about my chisel sharpening.
Well, tell us about the classes that you teach. People come to you and say, I want to learn how to, did you just prepare a gourd or make a lamp?
I have a list of about 8 or 9 different projects on my website, and I'll usually just choose 1 or 2 of them or maybe 3 a month and, pick a time and people show up for it. For the class, but that kind of random me selecting the project and the time often doesn't work. So actually, more lately, groups of people have been coming, you know, either like a family reunion or a bunch of people from who get together at the workplace or something will come to me and say, we want to make, you know, a bowl with a pine needle rim, or we want to do the globe lights or something like that. And they choose the time. That works out really well. That globe light, I think maybe you saw it on my website. It's like a sphere where the light comes out and all the, it's a zillion holes that you poke on the gourd. And people love that one. I can do that one every month because there doesn't seem to be any end to the hole drilling.
Have you tried making instruments? That seems like it would be a real art unto itself.
Yeah, I've made drums and rattles and like a thunder drum that's kind of fun and some horns. My brother helped me get the business off of the ground several years ago.
Or out of the ground, as we can quip.
Yeah. He was making ukuleles and banjos out of gourds, and I would love to do that, but I'll tell you the part with the strings and the frets and the neck, that really throws me. I could do the gourd part easily enough.
Wow, God, I can't imagine how complicated it must be to make an instrument with a specific sound, and you probably have to go back and recarve it and then make changes for the tones and stuff. Wow.
So there are some people who are doing that, and they come to me for gourds. I've had a few people doing that, but I so far have stayed away from the stringed instruments, but I got to tell you, I've got this dream of making a kora someday.
Oh, a kora. We have one here in the studio.
Do you?
Yes, Nate has one.
Cool.
Yeah, that's an African instrument for anybody who doesn't know. There must have been a tradition of Native Americans using gourds. Have you gotten into any of the history with some of the local Native American tribes or to talk about other ways of using them?
Well, that would be a really interesting thing to do, to talk with a local. But I haven't done that, but I have been doing a little bit of research just recently. I had the opportunity to give a presentation at the New York State Art Teachers Association. And so I learned a little bit about gourds in the Native American population using gourds as birdhouses, the marten houses.
Oh, yeah.
They would hang the gourds up to attract the purple martens to the village, and that would help decrease the mosquito population, for one thing.
Ah.
And, of course, I've heard about gourds being used for as ceremonially, you know. But there was a big controversy about how gourds came from Africa to the Americas so many years ago.
Mm-hmm. Thousands of years ago, probably.
Yeah, several thousand years ago. But did they come over the Bering Strait carried by you know, early people that way, or did they bob across the Atlantic?
Oh.
Yes, there was this big, like, question in the Gourd world. And in not only the Gourd world, but anthropologists want to know the answer to that question. And there were some genetic studies that seemed to indicate that they were carried across the Bering Strait.
Wow.
But that probably wasn't, that didn't really make a whole lot of sense because it's a tropical plant, or at least it really requires, warmth. It can't, and the trip across the Bering Strait wasn't
conducive to that.
Wasn't a really quick trip.
Yeah.
So so some really good genetic studies finally showed that the Gourds in the Americas are more closely related to the African varieties rather than the Asian varieties.
Uh-huh.
So they bobbed across the Atlantic.
That's so interesting. That, I mean, something like a gourd can be tied to anthropology and you know, the motions of people into different parts of the world.
Exactly.
That's really amazing to me. Are you concerned at all about climate change and the environmental, you know, craziness that's going on? Are you worried about whether that's going to affect
your
growing?
I'm concerned for our world and... And I guess honestly, sometimes when I'm very happily drilling away on a gourd, it occurs to me that I should be doing something more, you know, that would be to fight climate change. But in terms of the gourds, actually growing gourds here in upstate New York, climate change is probably going to be in their favor.
Ah.
No. Uh-huh. Yes, I'm worried like everybody else is, but not in terms of the gourds.
You know, we only have about a minute left. Is there any way that your work as a midwife and a nurse practitioner has helped you as somebody who works in gourds? Is it working with your hands perhaps, and you learned some techniques that help you be a carver? And
I recognized as a midwife that I was good at working with my hands. And I you know what I want to say, Tish, is that I feel so blessed to have participated in so many miracles in this town.
Oh, yeah.
And I never really got a chance to say thank you for that. And I never told my story. I used to, like, when I was Graham O, people would say, how did you get the name O? And I said, well, I'll tell you when you're in labor. And then, of course, they would never remember to ask me that story. So any of you women who I helped with your babies, you know, I'd be glad to tell you the story if you come to Gourdlandia. I feel like it was just such a treasure to do that work.
Yeah, and then the work you're doing now is absolutely fabulous. Makes people smile.
So, I invite anybody to come to Gourdlandia. It's a great place to visit.
I was going to say, contact information, give people your website.
Yes, it's gourdlandia.com, and please come visit. I love to show people around, and I've got a little shop there. And Jenny Pope has her studio there at Gourdlandia, too, her printing studio.
Uh-huh. And you're open during the winter hours.
Yep.
People have to call first, though.
I'm there from 11 to 5, Monday through Friday. You have to call for weekends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Graham Otteson, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with all this creative work. It's great.
Thank you very much, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.